your heart beats faster and faster.
Supernatural is the natural, just not yet understood. Elbert Hubbard, ladies and gentlemen, it's Sunday night, and this is the Ghost Men and Demon Hunter Show.
Oh, yeah, paranormal broadcasting, where if three times is the charm, then we're two-thirds as charming.
Hey, gang, we are live back in studio, and we'll be in the Genie chat room all night long.
And you can log into that chat room by going to our website at www.ghostanddemon.com.
And this is the Ghost Man, Sean B.
That would make me Nathan S., a.k.a. the Demon Hunter.
And that would make this Sunday, March 8th broadcast of the G&D Show.
The Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show is independently produced by Nathan Schoonover and Sean Burris and is broadcast live on Omnisound, KarmaCast, Absurd Radio, and the Planet Paranormal Radio Network. And we are recorded for the Black Vault Radio Network and the Para-X Radio Network.
Yay! Tonight's guest, Stacy Horn, author of Unbelievable. We'll be talking ghosts, poltergeist, telepathy, and all kinds of weird stuff tonight on the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
The Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show is beyond the normal broadcast, and it starts right now.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Original Bad Boys of Paranormal, and your host for tonight's show, Ghostman and Demon Hunter.
Yes.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, listeners from around the world. Thanks for joining us. I'm sure to be another great episode of the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
Ooh, yes. And hopefully, with any luck, any charm, any ability whatsoever, we might be able to get through tonight, considering nothing I can do can seem to get this system to work tonight.
Well, every time you need some spit and elbow grease, put it together, man. A little chewing gum. Get it going, huh?
Maybe. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I our phone system's down, so no calls tonight.
Right.
And poor Sean is getting a ton of feedback. Hopefully our guest won't when she comes on.
Yeah, because Sean can deal with the feedback. I can talk over myself. I can talk faster than I can talk.
There you go. There you go. That's what it is. So all I can do, I'm going to try and turn my mic down, turn my gain up, and see if that helps at all.
Get your game on.
Yeah, that's it. My gain is on. Mm-hmm. It's been a rough week for me this week, Sean. Well, we can go into our paranormal tip of the week, but I just want to send my love out to my family there. For those of you who don't know, I lost two members of my family this week. I lost my Uncle Larry, Snover. He, the guy who taught me to play poker, Sean.
Right.
The reason I can't get a game anywhere anymore, because my uncle taught me to start playing poker when I was 7.
How to count cards.
I guess. And in the last 32 years, I've gotten good enough that none of my friends will play with me anymore. But,
well, God bless you, brother. I know it's been a tough week, and, It's we all go through it, don't we? I mean, it hits, and you got to get through it, and it's tough. It's tough to do a show, especially after what you've been through this last week. But we're here, and we're giving him hell, so what are you going
to
do?
That's right, and I also want to send my love out to my family because my sister Patty passed away. They both passed away of heart attacks this week. So love to you all, and hope all is going well on your end. I know it's been rough. So, but Sean, paranormal tip of the week.
Yeah, we were kind of discussing that before the show to talk about what we should discuss tonight on the show.
It's a tough call. It really is, because what can we cover? Nobody's sending us in any tips for paranormal tip of the week.
No, we got to do stuff on our own.
Either we were expecting questions from what people might want to hear about.
Right.
Or maybe, you know, their own tips for other people, but nothing.
Apparently our listeners know it all, brother. They don't need any tips.
They don't listen to us to get the truth. No.
Right.
They listen
right.
to us because we are the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter. But,
that's right. Quality paranormal broadcasting.
But we decided, since nobody wanted to send us anything this week, we would go with something simple.
Right.
And we're going to discuss batteries.
Batteries. This isn't a female broadcast, guys. This is. Did you get that?
I got that, Sean. I got
sexuality,
that.
Female broadcast. Oh, it's like the Energizer Bunny. We can say Energizer, I think, as long as
as long as we're not saying it in a derogatory form or
that's right,
claiming anything to do with it.
But you know, we were talking about that, Demon Hunter. Batteries really are a ghost hunter's best friend,
or their worst enemy,
or their worst enemy. Absolutely. Why don't you give us an example of a battery situation that you've ran out in the field?
A simple one, I guess, would be going out to Triangle Field in Gettysburg.
Yeah.
And pulling out my equipment, and I specifically bought the camera that I had because it died our last trip to Whispers Estate.
Right.
But bought this camera because I could buy the either rechargeable batteries or the high lithium batteries. I wouldn't have to buy a camera battery. I'm making
right.
little notation marks with my fingers here. Bad for radio, but a camera
yeah.
battery so
yeah.
that I could buy any batteries I wanted for this camera.
Right.
So I bought the high grade, you know, lithium, long life, get 800 pictures instead of 100 pictures batteries for my
right.
little tiny camera. Shouldn't have taken that much to begin with. Daylight,
right.
didn't even need a flash. I put the batteries in 12 minutes earlier, and batteries died.
Right.
Now, what caused my batteries to die in the middle of Triangle Field?
See, that's a whole other discussion right there. You know, a lot of people say that it's the ghost energy. They draw the energy from the batteries to be able to communicate through EVP or manifest themselves or whatever, you know. But I think there's some simple answers to the question. I think a lot of times ghost hunters just don't check their batteries before they go out in the field.
That could be. That could be.
And I think sometimes you just get duds and you never realize it because you're out in the field. I mean, how many times do you actually go out into the field and you spend a lot of time out in the cemetery, maybe once, twice a month?
Yeah.
So you're dealing with these batteries for long periods of time, and I think sometimes you find duds. They're not good.
That could be, too. That could be, too, because, you know, who's to say that my batteries are the best batteries that are out there? Because I bought
right.
them specifically for the ease to be able to change them. Now, I also, as we reported last year, believe that all battery drain isn't necessarily ghosts. And it's not mistakes, and it's not anything except a natural occurrence, because when... You know, people go out with ion counters to try and look for ghosts.
Right.
Because the ionization is supposed to rise. Well, a lot of things cause positive ions, the number of positive ions to rise. And when you have positive ions, you have ions that have one extra positive, you know, I'm skipping on the word here because I don't want to say it wrong. But one extra positive part there that's going around trying to find a negative to charge with. If it can
right.
find your batteries, it's going to drain your batteries of all those, and then your batteries don't work.
See, there you go.
And thunderstorms can cause this to happen. Power lines can sometimes cause this to happen. Poorly grounded areas can cause this to happen. So a lot of things could cause this, and then you look, you're looking at your thing and go, the ghost must have drained my batteries, and you know, forget the fact that the thunderstorm was rolling in.
Right.
So, you know, you got to look at your batteries as a tool that can or can't be used, or it can't be used as a measuring device, because right. just because your batteries went dead doesn't mean you found a ghost.
Now, see, I believe people can suck the energy from us, like psychic vampires and stuff. I work with a cat like that. Just sucks the life out of you, man, every day, Monday through Friday. But, you know, I think it's sometimes with the batteries when you're out in the field, I think sometimes if there's a lot of spiritual activity, maybe it does affect the battery a little bit, you know? So I'm kind of back and forth on that, man.
Well, the joke among my friends, too, is I had to go out and buy an automatic watch. You've seen my watch, Sean. It winds itself when I wear it. Because right. I buy a watch that has a 2 or 5 year battery in it, or however long it's supposed to last, and it never lasts. I think I found one with a 10 year battery once, and that one lasted me a year.
Yeah.
Usually they last me 3 to 6 months, and I keep having to change the batteries. I only wear the watch my father left me for special occasions because I don't want to drain the battery.
Right.
So I had to go out and buy an automatic watch because something in me drains batteries. Watch batteries. Right. So who knows?
And that's an actual phenomenon that's happening. I forget what to call it. I forget what the term is, that people can suck the juice from their watch batteries or whatever.
My brother-in-law couldn't wear a watch for a day without draining the battery.
Wow.
It was before automatic watches became affordable, so he always wore winding watches that he had to wind, because mine winds itself automatically when I wear it. But he had to wind his watch, because if he wore a watch with a battery, literally, 24 to 72 hours, his batteries would be dead in his watches.
Oh, yeah. So the to the week definitely is stock up on batteries.
Stock up on batteries and look for good batteries. Don't care if you get them on sale, but, you know, don't buy the cheapo store brand batteries if you can help it, unless you're planning to buy a lot of them, and keep a close eye on your battery gauges so you know when you have to change them.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But I tell you what, Demon Hunter, getting right into the news, the paranormal news tonight, I wanted to mention this on last week's show, actually. It's kind of short and sweet, but it's ice circles and a strange roar in space. And it says baffled scientists are struggling to explain an extraordinary new phenomena to discover the discovery of dozens of ice circles that seem to be linked to a strange, powerful signal from space. Giant spinning disks of ice are materializing over rivers and waterways across America, Northern Europe, and Asia. Recently, circles have been forming over absolutely still water. Some have been 20 feet across or larger, and many show unusually intricate geometric features like crystalline growths around their edges. See, I figured you'd be proud of me, guys, getting to the whole sentence after I've been hitting the Tecate all night.
I'm very proud of you there, Sean.
Intricate geometric features, I did it again, the crystalline growths around the edges and patterns of circles inside the circles, guys. Researchers have just now been able to link several ice circles to late-night UFO sightings, Demon Hunter, and this is also accompanied with a strange hum that people in northern Wales have been hearing, plus these ice circles have been forming in America, guys. It's actually started out in northern Europe, and now it's made its way to America. And so the question comes up, how is people going to, well, I mean, what's the big deal about this? Last time it was like Farmer John's crop circle. He's out there with a piece of cardboard and a rope, and he's making all these fancy designs in his cornfield. Now what are they going to say? How's people forming ice?
It's interesting. I have a circle of ice, one circle of ice left out in my yard.
Really?
I do. Of course.
Have an alien abduction right there. You could have been cornholio by the little green men.
Well, I think it's more likely has something to do with the fact that it's right over my septic tank.
Oh, okay. Well, you took all the fun right out of it.
I've still got the scar on the back of my neck from where the aliens left the implant, so they don't have to track me anymore. They can track me.
Can we say cornholio on the air?
I don't know. Who knows? I don't even know if the networks will bother to pick us up anymore. So.
I know. No, they probably gave up on us, man. But, you know, another thing, Demon Hunter, we go through these stories every week, man. We just comb the globe looking for the best stories to give people. And I had mentioned this before. Actually, you and I had brought this up. But you remember the cloning could raise the dead conversation we had?
We did. We had that conversation a few weeks ago about them being able to clone dogs.
Right, and there's a new thing that came out, guys. They're still doing this. It says scientists have created living, breathing clones of a frozen mouse. That's what they've done now, Demon Hunter, that died 16 years ago, raising the possibility that we may one day soon have the technology to raise deceased human beings from their graves.
It's going to be like Futurama with the heads in the jars.
Yeah, we're going that way, I think. It's the very first time a frozen animal has been cloned, and if the resurrection procedure works for animals, there's no solid reason to believe it can't be modified to work for humans as well. It talks about Dolly the sheep that was cloned before, and it also states that they won't be responsible for any cloned humans because, of course, the personalities are very different. Just because you can clone a human being does not mean it's going to be the same human being. In fact, it'd be a totally different person, just with the same characteristics.
So he might have Hitler's mustache, but he wouldn't be Hitler.
It would look like Nathan with Hitler's mustache. But it's
great.
Professor Ian Wilmot, man, out of the UK, and he's doing these studies. And it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. They got the rat, been dead 16 years. Dolly was dead like 10 years. They brought the sheep back. Pretty interesting, man. Pretty interesting stuff going on.
Well, I
down.
Thought Dolly was alive when they cloned the other sheep.
Was Dolly alive?
I do believe Dolly was alive.
I could swear I read the article.
Dolly might have died since then, but I'm pretty sure when they did the cloning, the two sheep, the sheep that the DNA came from was originally alive. Because they noticed that as the clone was aging, it was starting at a young age, it was starting to get arthritis and things like that before its time, which they made them wonder if inherited traits such as arthritis and other genetic traits advanced quicker in a clone.
I wonder. That's a good question right there. And actually, all it says about Dolly the sheep was, she says she was cloned 16 years ago. They've cloned a wife.
Now she's mutton.
Yeah, now she's, you probably ate her. Lamb chops, baby. You ever had a gyro? That's what you're dealing with when you get Dolly. Dolly the gyro. They cloned her, probably gonna have the perfect gyro and cucumber sauce. It's good stuff. But anyway, more in the news. Ghost voices on tape. Experts have obtained dramatic new proof of life after death, Demon Hunter, after analyzing hundreds of reports of mystery voices appearing on audio recordings. Paranormal researchers have noted that at the UK, a sharp increase in reports of electronic voice phenomena, that's EVP, the eerie experience of ghostly voices that become audible in the background noise of ordinary recordings. Tape players, telephone answers, answering services, and even digital recording studios have all been affected, explains electrical engineer Harold Fennett of North Miami Beach, Florida. Sounds that no one heard while recording are suddenly there on playback, voices hissing, whispering, or even moaning distinct words and phrases. Previously, nearly all cases of EVP were confirmed to places with the kind of history likely to encourage ghosts, a hospital, mausoleum, or old prison, or else involved people with a loved one who had recently passed away. But the latest wave of EVP is happening even to hardened cynics in the middle of crowded modern environments. People are receiving EVP through digital broadcasting, through satellites, and through their computers now. There is an uprising in EVP voices that's been stated from 2008 to 2009, Demon Hunter. The study they've done, that EVP is on the rise, that cats that don't even believe in it have been picking up their phone in the middle of the night and getting EVP or what they believe could be EVP, hissing, loud noises, whatever. So, you know, it raises the question, are the dead coming through the woodwork? They might be. They're coming out of the woodwork.
They're coming back. They're coming back to take what's theirs. If you bought a house, you know, at a auction after someone passed away, that person's coming back to say, I want that house back. Give it back.
Well, Demon Hunter, you know the Mayan calendar. Everything's coming to an end. You got the religious freaks in the street saying it's coming down. The world's burning. And it raises the question. The dead seem to be speaking a little bit more. You see,
I still think that Mayan calendar was just these guys were sitting there going, we have been carving numbers into this rock for who knows how long now. And my arm's tired. You know, look at this big convergence here. It looks like a good place to stop. I think that's what it is, you know, and
you wouldn't even made it that far.
I would have been like, I got this tennis elbow. I've got a golf hip. No, I don't want to. I'm taking tomorrow off, you know, and
that's right. But there will be no year 800 AD.
Hey, you know, I wanted to give you a piece of news that probably won't be in the news right now, but I found it interesting because I posted it. I made my first post on Wikipedia. You there, Sean? Maybe he is, and maybe he ain't. Hold on. I'm not sure what happened to Sean, so I will continue with my story after I send him a message here to see if he's still online. I posted on Wikipedia for the first time due to the Montauk Monster. Some of you may have caught the Montauk Monster pictures a while back on the beach. It was, you know, there was a lot of discussion what it might be. What could it be, this Montauk Monster that washed up on the beach? Yeah. And I was watching the other night a special on the Montauk Monster. And they had a vet examine photos of the corpse.
Yeah.
And when he got done examining photos of the corpse, he kind of gave a laugh and announced that it was a boxer. It was a boxer because...
In fact, the canine.
It was. And the nose had apparently been eaten away with while it was out in the ocean. The fur and the skin had been washed off from being washed around in the surf. And looked like a beak, if you remember, a lot of people saw a beak, was actually the rhino bone sticking out after being eaten away. And if you actually look at it now that you know it's a boxer. Now, there's two different photos of it. The photos that hit all the internet that everybody saw saying the Montauk Monster. And then a photo from the other direction where even I looked at it and said, I think that's a dog.
Right, right.
So there are more than one photo. There is more than one photo out there. And it is a boxer. And I went on Wikipedia and it said, it listed all the things people said it could be and then a reason why it wasn't that. So
poor
I went
guy
in,
floated a long way, didn't he?
Yeah, and so I went in underneath where it said canine and corrected it to state that it was a canine, it was a boxer. The eye ridges match, the pads on the paws match, and, you know, the body basically matches. It was a dog. So here was our hope that some unknown beast had washed up and cryptozoologists. But you know what? With all the hype about the Montauk Monster, I did not see anybody going out and claiming the remains to study them.
Right.
And
well, see, you would think that would have been the first thing to happen.
You would have thought it would have been, and it would have been the best thing to do. But there's a problem in paranormal where people seem to think that if they get the evidence and it proves negative and they have to report it, then they're going to be the bad guy. Or maybe people didn't want to be the bad guy and find out. Maybe people just didn't want the truth. But, you know, first off, here's these photos going on the internet. If somebody had really, really believed that this was a unknown beast, don't you think they would have told people where the remains had gone after it had been collected?
Yeah, you would think.
So... Sorry, folks. Montauk Monster is the Montauk Boxer. So.
It's canine, folks. It's canine. I got another story. Let me take a drink here. Okay. But, David Hunter, what is the scariest thing that we've talked about before on this show for a paranormal investigator? Remember the dolls with the glass eyes?
For a particular paranormal investigator, I don't mind dolls.
And we did a story, me and you ran a story, this has been maybe a year ago, we ran a story on the talking Elmo.
Oh yes, the evil Elmo.
Well, this one's brand new, it comes out of the new edition of Paranormal Magazine. It's Oklahoma, a baby doll coos out satanic message, that's the title. It says Oklahoma residents have reacted with horror at satanic and Islamic messages they believe they can hear in the mumblings of Fisher Price's named Little Mommy Real Loving Baby Cuddle and Coo Doll. Did you guys get that? Little Mommy Real Loving Baby Cuddle and Coo Doll. Some parents claim they can hear it mumble, Satan is king, and squeak out, Islam is the light. Stores in Owasso, Owasso, have pulled the doll from their shelves following complaints. And it says you can go check out the doll right now, guys. Get your pens ready. It's http centralmediaserver.com /KJRH/DOCS/DAW.MP3. That's centralmediaserver.com/KJ, I'm sorry, KJRH/DOCS/DAW.MP3. Guys, you can check out the doll for yourself, but in fact, that is the little mommy, real loving baby cuddle and coodle that is saying Satan is king when you push its belly. So.
Or people are claiming it says Satan is king. I still remember when the Teletubbies came out and the little red Teletubby came out and they had to pull it off the shelves. Because
they were evil.
Well, people claim that it was making a derogatory remark to homosexuals and asking them to bite its butt. So, and see, I've actually heard it. It does sound like that. So
I want that doll, man. I gotta have. See, people are nuts. People are nuts. They got too much time on their hands or too much marijuana to smoke, and they're just the dolls are talking to them now. And I got to tell you, though, these are brave people, because if I seen the little mommy real loving baby cuddle and coo doll and she started barking out, you know, Satan is God around me, I'd probably wet myself and cuddle and coo.
And there wouldn't be anyone there to change you, Sean.
No, there would be nobody. But I got a real quick story, Demon Hunter. Do we got a couple seconds?
We have 1 minute.
Okay, let's fill this up, brother, because I knew you'd love this story. This actually comes out of Chicago. It's an elderly woman in Chicago knew what it was like to have family skeletons in the cupboard. She had two of them and also a badly decomposed body. The corpses belonged to various siblings, one of whom may have died 20 years ago, Demon Hunter. Police say one of the siblings was last seen alive in the 1980s, another in 2003, and a third in May of this year. Their remains were found covered by sheets in various parts of the house where they had lived with the unnamed woman, now in her 90s. Foul play is not suspected, guys. And that comes out of the Chicago Herald Times. And, yeah, the police broke in there apparently last week, and they got calls on bad odor from that area, and they broke in, and they found all those decomposing bodies in there along with skeletons that have already, you know, decomposed over the years. But that's straight off the presses, guys. That's hot. That's G&D exclusive right there.
Well, G&D and the press you got it from.
That's true. That's true. They ran it first, but we actually took the time to read it and broadcast it.
That's right. Hey, bro, I'm going to light up a Macanudo here that I got at Butthead's Tobacco Emporium this week.
Wackanooty, buttheads!
Macanudo in honor of my uncle, and
absolutely.
Light that up, and we'll go to break. We'll come back. We'll have a few haunted headline news stories, and then come back with our guest Stacey Horn and our buddy Jason Gowan.
K-sera, sera, everybody. Stay tuned. It's going to get crazy.
We'll be right back after this.
Are you looking for your favorite paranormal podcast? Well, come and visit us at planetparanormal.com. We are your guide to the other side. Come and check out our hub to see all our latest podcasts from your favorite paranormal celebrities. And don't forget to check out our news feeds to see what's late great in the paranormal community, as well as events coming to a town near you. Come visit us on the web at www.planetparanormal.com. That's www.planetparanormal.com.
The Darker Side of the Moon is a listener's guide to the creepy, the spooky, and the unexplained. The Darker Side is an alternative variety show that delves deep into the shadowy secrets of just about everything, from the occult to dark comedy. Sometimes serious, but mostly fun. Our show has a little for everyone. Join me, Becky Ray, and Laura Moon Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's 8 p.m. Central and 6 p.m. Pacific at DarkerSideRadio.com.
The vault is open. You're listening to the Haunted Headlines, your source for the stories making waves in the paranormal news. Sponsored by GhostVillage.com at www.ghostvillage.com/news.
Good evening, I'm Chris Balzano, and you're listening to the Haunted Headlines, Ghost Village's weekly trek through the paranormal newswire to bring you the biggest stories affecting the ghostly community. Ghost Village launched its Ghost Village for Kids site a few months ago, but a teacher in Park Hills, Missouri made news this week for her use of the paranormal to teach a lesson. In the Daily Journal from that town, it was reported Patty Pingel's third grade class at Central West Elementary has been using the newspaper all year to learn more about language and modifiers. And when a recent article appeared about the ghost hunters, she allowed her students to take advantage of their natural interests. They used the article, entitled Ghost Hunters Return for Another Eerie Night, as a way to identify adverbs and work on summaries. The students not only learned their lessons well, but also got a glimpse of the paranormal world. Ms. Miguel's students might have another chance to work with the gentleman from TAPS, because they also made the news this week. According to Domain Name Wire, TAPS has no legal right to the web address www.taps.com, which is currently run as a job website. While they do own the rights to the name, they have trademarked it for such goods as clothing, they may have lost the fight to get the coveted URL. The court ruled the investigators may have registered the name in the late 90s, before the current owner, but the name was only valuable after the show Ghost Hunters debuted in 2004. By then, the web address was taken by someone else and registered in good faith. The team will now have to continue their current long address, but has already been proven people find them just fine. And lastly, New Orleans has long been known as one of the great ghost cities of the United States, but now it has become an epicenter of sorts. It is now home to Paraplex, an attraction that is part paranormal amusement park and part ghostly research center. According to their website at www.paraplex.net, quote, the high-tech paranormal complex includes paranormal art galleries, hands-on interactive psychic testing exhibits, and a simulated seance room. A ghost experience simulator and its own on-site theater for workshops, documentaries, and feature film screenings. The attraction offers tickets for people of all ages, although under 6 are free. Where any paranormal experience might be tainted by Paraplex's need to have guests experience something, the fact that it still exists is proof the paranormal media joyride may not be dead quite yet. That's all the news we have for this week. If you'd like to find out more about these stories and others, you can visit our site at www.ghostvillage.com/news. I'm Chris Balzano, and that's what's haunting me.
I then reach out, touch ghost with my hand, and lock him into place until I choose to let him go.
Join us on a real-life ghost hunt with Dr. Gary Hawkins and his team of investigators.
It
came from behind you. How the heck did it come from behind you?
To make that kind of shadow, there is no... The only light is from that way.
That was amazing. There was no light. The camera's facing the same direction it is now. It couldn't have been. I mean, there could have been no shadow passed behind. Unless it wasn't something that normally creates a shadow.
Well, you know what? I don't know what to say about that. I mean, I can't explain it. That was weird.
That's the spirits of the Rockcliffe Mansion. Seeing is believing.
Buy online. shop.ezproductions.net.
Hi, this is Kalila Smith of Haunted History Tours in New Orleans, and you're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Well, brother, we are back. We have our...
Oh, Kalila, I wish I was in New Orleans right now.
Oh, I would love to be anywhere warm, I gotta be honest. And Kalila looks so warm that...
She does. She looks warm and fuzzy. She looks like the Betty Poop doll that we was talking about earlier. Was it the Betty Poop or was the Mommy Love-A-Lot?
Mommy Love-A-Lot, yes. And yeah. I think it's Betty Boop, not Betty Poop, Sean.
Betty Poop. One of them's talking about satanic rituals, man, when the babies push their belly. So something's going on.
Oh, don't even want to think about it. But we're back with our buddy Jason Gowan.
Hello, hello.
Ta-da.
Ta-da.
Welcome back, Jay Gow.
And we are here with
Thank
a very...
Thank you, Mr. Sean.
Oh, he speaks.
Yes.
We are here with a very special guest, Miss Stacy Horn. Ms. Stacy Horn. Author of Unbelievable. And
hi,
Stacy. How are you?
I'm good. There's a lot of echo.
Oh, let me see if I can fix that.
We've
got a system problem going tonight, but I'll see what I can do.
It's okay. I can cope.
But
let's deal.
we were talking, Sean and I were talking earlier about some of the stuff that you've written. This book about what goes on at the Parasci Lab in Duke University is not your first. You are known for some other books.
Yeah, this is my fourth book.
And the other ones were, I know there was a cold case one from New York.
Yeah, the book before this was The Restless Sleep, and it was about the NYPD's cold case squad. Actually, the book and the contacts that I made from that book came in handy with this book, surprisingly. I ended up having to talk to cold case detectives a number of times. It was weird.
There.
Wow, I'll be...
Now, do you ever get... Do you ever get misquoted in any of the stuff that you do when you're writing stuff like this and people start talking about your stories and they talk about how they read this and they're talking about your book, but it wasn't actually what you said?
That was weird that you ask all the time. But why would you ask that?
Well, it's actually an interesting thing I asked it because we just played a news clip and they were talking about an advertisement for the Ghost Hunters Return and how they were talking about the Taps Group. However, that was not the Taps Group that did the Ghost Hunters Return show this year. It was Sean was supposed to attend, but he wasn't able to make it. But it was Jason Gowan and I, who's also in the chat room with or in the room with us talking. So Jason,
yeah,
they gave the credit to Taps.
Yeah, it happens all the. I'm kind of okay about it. I mean, for instance, every time I write a book, I will spend all I can to make sure everything in the book is accurate. And it takes me a couple of years to write a book, so I've got a couple of years to get it right. Nonetheless, I still make mistakes. So I figure people who have to, like, you know, put out something every day or in a week, you know, I forgive them if it's got mistakes.
Now, Stacy, the name Stacy Horn, the name of the book, unbelievable. I want to know what is unbelievable. What's going on at Duke University? I want to know. Turn my head, girl. I'm interested. I got to have this book now.
Well, the book is about the experiments that took place between 1935 and 1965 at Duke University. And I called it unbelievable because the scientific community never accepted the results of these experiments. They focused on ESP almost exclusively, but they did research other things. They looked into poltergeists and ghosts a little bit. They actually did a 13-year survey of ghosts. At the time, when Duke Parapsychology Lab was around, it was very famous at the time. So whenever anything weird happened to someone, they would write the lab because there was basically no place else to write to. So they had thousands and thousands and thousands of letters. So they did this survey of these letters just to see, you know, if they could find any patterns. And the most interesting thing, to me anyway, that they found was people hear ghosts more than see them. And as a result of that, I start just researching all this stuff about hearing voices. And there's all this research out now. I mean, you might be aware of it, but it was new to me, that lots of people apparently hear voices. And now, now that, like, the scientific community is thinking that it's not necessarily a sign of mental illness, like, apparently perfectly normal people report hearing voices.
Well, I hear voices all the time, but nobody's ever called me perfectly normal.
Now, Stacy, I gotta say, right moments before you came on, I read a story about the increase in electronic voice phenomena this year. Between the end of 2008 and present 2009, the scientific community has came forward and noticed a large outcry of people saying that they've had experienced electronic voice phenomena this year.
Where did you read that?
It was actually in the New York Times is where I got the article out of that, and it was last Friday's.
Oh, my God, you're kidding. The New York Times?
It was in the New York Times, and it was a very short article. I don't have the page right in front of me right now. Forgive me. But it
Paranormal
was
goes big time.
And it was talking about electronic voice phenomena and the way that it has increased in people being able to pick this up. They didn't want to come right out and say it. You could tell that they were kind of beating around the bush. They were saying people are hearing voices, things are going on, but they were talking about people using their answering services, stuff like that, and they're picking up these recorded audio.
Yeah, because that's different. I mean, hearing voices and recording voices, I mean, it could be the same thing, but I think the Duke people and all these research that I found recently, they're talking about something else. The EVP stuff is fascinating. I love that stuff.
Yes, yes. But they actually referenced the EVP. That's what got me going. They actually gave notice to electronic voice phenomena.
Do you guys do that?
Yep.
What's that?
Oh, yes, we do it all the time. Whenever we can, we get out there and set up the equipment and record for EVP.
Oh, I love that. The
like, if there's something left for me to do in... Oh, go ahead.
What?
Sorry. You go ahead.
I was just going to say, the Duke Parapsychology guys, EVP wasn't really a big thing. It was just starting to become known, I believe, in the 60s. And they weren't really terribly interested in it, and their theory was that it was psychokinesis, that people were somehow physically imprinting the voices on the tape. It wasn't the dead.
Now, I watched Firestarter. Did you see anything in those labs that made you think that that book was written about them down at the Duke University?
About Firestarter?
Yeah, because, you know, it was supposed to be a government lab it was a college lab, and Duke University was the only laboratory doing those kind of tests. So do you think Stephen King was writing about Duke University when he wrote Firestarter?
He was writing about Stacy.
What?
He was writing about Stacy, man. She's going to set us on fire any second.
The Duke University was the inspiration for a lot of stuff, but then, you know, Hollywood goes in their own direction. In fact, one of the things I wrote about in the book was, do you know the movie The Haunting?
Yes.
Very well, very well.
I love that movie. But I was reading the book, and one of the characters, actually a few of the characters, are definitely based on people from Duke. I mean, unless you know the names, you wouldn't necessarily recognize them. But when I was reading her book, it was like definitely based on him. That was fun.
Now, you know, a good friend of the show, Carmen Reed, which was the mother in a movie that's coming out this month called A Haunting in Connecticut. She's a good friend of the show. We've had a chance to talk to her, too. It's very exciting because they deal with a lot of the stuff that we're talking about tonight in that movie.
You know, I saw a poster for that movie. What is that? It was the first I'd heard of it. What is it about?
The movie.
Well, Haunting Connecticut. You know that little series on the Discovery Channel, A Haunting?
Yeah.
I think, Nathan, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's where it started. It was like a short story.
Well, it was actually an event.
It was a full episode.
It was a full episode, and it was one of the first two episodes. But it was actually based on a true story that happened here in Connecticut, where the names were, of course, changed because Cameron Reed was the mother involved in it. And she had to find a home here in Connecticut close to the hospital where her son, who had cancer, needed to be treated. And she rented a house only to find out that it had been a funeral parlor. Now, it's kind of like, Gowan, you were friends with George Lutz from the Amityville Horror Story. And George often talked about how the movie went so out of the range of what actually happened.
Right, he did, absolutely, yes.
And people often said that George was a liar because the story seemed so unbelievable, but they only knew the story from the book or the movie, which had been taken out of context. In this case, I've actually heard the story from Cameron, we all have, firsthand, and I saw the commercials for the movie, and I just went, oh, it's going to be another Amityville.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much stuff happening in the movie, just in the commercials, that I can see never actually happened in real life.
Yeah,
the Ninja
Turtles is playing John
Zaffis. Who is playing John
Zaffis? The guy that played Casey Jones in the Ninja Turtles movies.
Somehow that seems appropriate.
Now, Stacy, I want to ask you, have you been able to work with any of these individuals that have experienced poltergeist activity or telepathy or anything like that, ghost hauntings?
Well, all the cases that I'm writing about, they took place so long ago. The closest I came was I found a poltergeist case that they researched in 1958 that took place out on Long Island. And I was able to find the original police files at the Nassau County Police. And I researched the story, and it was really good. I mean, this detective, I went through all his notes, and they're, you know, very dry, very straightforward, even when he's talking about, you know, things that are completely outrageous. And it describes things like, you know, a bottle moving along a counter and then falling off the side while they all stood there and watched. And this guy, you know, didn't believe in ghosts, didn't believe in anything, but, you know, he had to write, you know, what he experienced and what he saw. And I was able to track there were two kids in the house at the time. They were, I forget what age, but like young, like 12, 13, that age. And everyone kind of suspected that it was the children just playing tricks of some sort. But the detective thoroughly researched it. And Duke University sent up a couple of scientists, and they thoroughly researched it. And everyone came to the same conclusion that it wasn't a hoax. And I tracked down one of the kids who's now an adult and someone who was writing for it at the time for Newsday. And I'm emailing with the Newsday guy, and so finally I say to him, what do you think it was? And this guy, you know, is a very serious writer. He writes about military intelligence now. You know, he's very conservative. So I expected him to just come back and say, it was the kid. And he writes back, I think it was a poltergeist. And, so, and I was just, like, so shocked. And then I reached the kid, who's now a grown woman, and I called her, and we spoke, and I asked her what she thought it was. And she doesn't believe in ghosts, but she said it happened. I don't know what the explanation is. I don't think it was a ghost. I think someday we'll have a scientific explanation, but these things happened. It wasn't made up. So I believed them.
Now, I looked at your website, stacyhorn.com/unbelievable, mm-hmm. and you've updated it, and because it was originally set up to tell people the book was coming out. And the book is coming out when?
Next week, actually.
Next week.
Awesome.
And I just wanted to say, I noticed you also had information up there about the original Exorcist, the story The Exorcist was based on.
I researched this book. I went down to Duke University, and I went through their archives. There's like 700 boxes of archives. And when I got down there, I just was thinking, oh, it's going to be Ghostbusters. But these are very serious scientists, and a lot of the stuff in these boxes were experiments, and it's a lot of math, and a lot of it went over my head. So I focused on the correspondence, the letters that the scientists wrote to each other, and then the letters that they got from people all over the country and all over the world. And it was really fun because you never knew, you know, one day I'd come across a letter from Albert Einstein or Richard Nixon. And one day, what? Hello?
Hello?
What was that, Gowan?
I don't know. There was a break in the feed.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Should I keep going or?
Keep going. We're more interested in what you say
it.
Than Jason.
Do it.
We love you, Jason. But go ahead, Stacey.
So one day I come across this letter from this priest, and he's writing to Ryan, and he's asking for help because his family in his parish are experiencing these disturbances. And I'm reading this letter, and it sounds exactly like The Exorcist. Furniture is moving, the bed is shaking, words are appearing on the boy's body. And I didn't know at the time that The Exorcist was based on a real kid. So I Google, and sure enough, you know, because I've got the kid's name, I find out that The Exorcist was based on a real story. Except William Peter Blatty, who wrote the book, changed the gender and age of the kid, and this was the boy that the movie was based on.
Right.
And Ryan and the priest kept up this correspondence. The family didn't want Ryan to come there. Like, the family was completely going with the idea that it was possession. But this first priest didn't think it was possession. He thought it was a poltergeist, and that's why he wrote Ryan asking for help. But the family didn't. What?
No, that was just feedback. I'm trying to fix it.
I was getting ready to say, Stacey, I thought you were trying to describe a night with me. The room was moving, everything was shaking, things was, you know, speaking in tongues, stuff like that.
Well, and when it was all over, everyone was terrified.
Well, you know too, Stacey, that one of the reasons believed that why you changed the sex and the gender of the gender and the name of the child in question was because it's considered bad form to give the name out of the child, even though it's available all over the internet now. It's considered bad form to discuss the name of the child that was involved in the original Exorcist story.
Well, I'll tell you, normally, you know, my books are nonfiction, so normally I will use the real name. But in this case, I also decided not to use the guy's real name because he's made it clear that he doesn't want any kind of attention and he just wants to put this behind him. So it just seemed cruel to give him, you know, to use his name and bring more attention to him. So I didn't.
And that's very that's very nice of you, and interesting that writing a book, you came up with the same conclusion.
To do that?
Yes.
Yeah. I went through this with my last book, and it happened a couple of times with this book, too. But my last book was about unsolved murder. So sometimes I wanted to talk to people who knew the murder victims. And so it was always this, like, agonizing thing of talking to these people who, you know, who had a child murdered, for instance. Like, do you want to talk to me? And I was just very, very, very gentle and careful approaching these family members. And it came up again in this book, actually. Another letter came in the 60s from this father who had a six-year-old boy who went missing in California. And so he was writing Ryan, asking him to help him, you know, to use ESP or psychics to help him find his missing boy. And I called that family, and I spoke to the mother. Now, this happened in 1960, I believe it was, so it's, you know, close to 50 years ago. And I called, and I spoke to that mother, and she just burst into tears, started crying, and she was talking about it as if it happened yesterday. It was just horrible.
Now, Stacey, I got to ask you, we have a question from the chat room, just came in, hot off the presses. They want to know, what is your definition of poltergeist?
Well, I'm not an expert in parapsychology. I researched the Duke Parapsychology Laboratory, so I know that generally poltergeist, you know, it stands for noisy spirit. Mm-hmm. But the theory that the lab had was that it was actually psychokinesis, like somebody in the vicinity had psychokinetic abilities, and they were the ones that were moving the objects.
Right.
So okay, in the Seaford house, they thought it was the children, too, but it wasn't the same as calling it a hoax.
Right. Well, I got to tell you, I live here in beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana, and when I went through training a long time ago, I was wanting to be a police officer, which was very short-lived, and I went through the academy for the Indianapolis Police Department. And when I got about halfway through there, I heard stories from fellow cadets and different people that had told me about a case that they teach you about that was basically poltergeist activity. Nobody would come out and say that, but they would, under their breath, they would tell you this story about an officer that was called out to a place in, like, 1980s, and, like, 84, 85, and when he arrived, dishes and plates were flying all over the house. This guy's seen this, and it kind of let you know about the occult and how to deal with, you know, certain things when you're in the police department. I thought that was so weird because that got real quick.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, researching this book, it's like when something like that happens, you know, that people either call a priest or the cops. And very often they're called the cops first. Yeah, and the cops, as you know, it's like they show up and they're like, okay.
Well, you know, it's
funny. I can't
shoot
him.
We had the high priestess of the Satanic Church on not too long ago. And she was saying that when Anton LaVey, who founded the Satanic Church, before he began the church, he would go out and work for the police officers. And when somebody called and said, there's a ghost in my attic, or something's moving around, or a flying saucer landed in my backyard, they would send him to take pictures and take notes because they didn't think it was worth time to send a real police officer. So that's how he got his, that's how he got his start involved in the paranormal world.
Where was that?
Well, I believe that was in California as well.
Because just in New York, and if you call the police, they can't not respond. They can't send someone else. They have to respond.
Well, we're also talking the 1950s, so.
Oh, okay.
We all know, we've all watched Life on Mars. We know the cops were different in the 50s and 60s. So.
You don't get beat with the rubber hose anymore. That happened back in that. Hey, Stacy, you had the Duke University, you spoke of that earlier. Do they still have a paranormal program going on there today?
Not at Duke, but the lab still exists. It's just not part of Duke anymore. It's called the Rhine Research Center.
Okay. And that is run by, I can't remember her name now.
Rhine's daughter,
and it's Feather Rhine now, right?
It's Sally Rhine Feather.
Rhine Feather. And I actually got to meet her in Virginia.
Really?
She spoke at a conference that I was attending. I went with John Zaffis, and it was funny because here was Sally. She stood up, and one of the professors from the institute sat up, and they began to speak, and she spoke on ESP and the studies that done at the Rhine Institute and Duke University. And then the next professor came up and spoke about quantum physics involved in the paranormal, and the room emptied. And I pretty much had the room to myself, and I found it fascinating. And I felt so bad that all these people left because either it didn't give them the fun aspect that ghost hunting seems to have for people these days, or it just, they couldn't comprehend what the people were saying, so they walked away. And
wait,
it was
did they
so
walk
great.
Out when Sally was speaking, or the quantum physicist?
The quantum physicist.
Oh, see, now, that stuff was as interesting as anything else.
I thought it was absolutely incredible. And to this day, the the Carp and the Scientist premise that he gave me, where a scientist was watching carp swim in a pool, and he would drop pebbles in the pool or touch the tip of the pool, and the carp could realize that something had affected its universe, but couldn't figure out what it was. And relating that to our understanding of something passing through from a 4+1 or 5+1 or even higher level in dimension and not being able to understand what it is, it captivated me. And unfortunately, people walked away and lost out on all that.
I wonder why they did.
It I got to admit, it was dry. But then again, my favorite book is Guns, Germs, and Steel. So I like dry reading because I find I find facts fascinating.
Do you remember his name?
And wet reading gets pages all messy.
But no, unfortunately, I don't remember his name, and it's a shame because he was a fantastic speaker.
Yeah, I like that stuff.
Now, hey, Stace, do you believe that someone can develop telekinesis? I mean, do I have to be born with it, or can I develop the power?
They didn't learn anything about it in that sense. Like that was actually the saddest part of the story, is they would find evidence for telepathy and psychokinesis over and over again, but they never really found out how it operated, so they couldn't really control it or enhance it. But their theory was that we all have that ability.
That wasn't anything. That's somebody clicking into our phone line, I think. So you're good,
yeah,
Stacey.
What's up with that?
Either it's that or it's an EVP.
So
I have a hard time. I can hear you, Nathan, I think, but Sean, I have a really hard time hearing him.
Okay, hear me? Can you hear me right now, Stacey?
Yeah, it comes across sometimes very staticky.
Okay, I just wanted to ask you one quick question, girl. What is your weirdest experience with ghost, poltergeist, or telepathy? I mean, what is the biggest one? If I told you right now, I wanted to know, what would you tell me?
What was the biggest what?
The biggest experience you've had with, say, ghostly encounters, poltergeist, or telepathy?
Oh, me personally?
Uh-huh.
I haven't had a lot of experiences personally, and the last one was like 30 years ago. But I was in a room with my boyfriend, and I just had this sense that, like, something bad was going to happen, and somehow, like, I was going to be the vehicle for it. Like, I was like, oh, I don't know how to describe it, like a pipe or I really don't know how to describe it. And I was looking at my boyfriend, and so I just said, I've got to look away from him because something is coming out of me. It's going to be bad, and I don't want to be looking at him when it happens. So I turned towards the kitchen sink, and the first thing that my eyes saw were the cabinets underneath the kitchen sink, and the cabinets just started opening and closing, like bang, 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 bang. And like, it's happening, like, and so my boyfriend, like, he was facing me, so it was going on behind him, and it's just, I just saw his eyes go wide, and then he whipped his head around and, like, saw it. So I know I caused that, but I'm not quite sure how.
So did that leave you believing that the paranormal existed, and you went into this with an open mind, even, like, hoping to find evidence, or did that leave you with just questions and more of a skeptic?
It wasn't related to this book. Like, I'm like a normal human being, and the idea that we might have abilities like beyond what we have now, that consciousness may extend in a way outside our bodies, that we might live after we die. I mean, who wouldn't want that to be true? So I went down there hoping to be convinced. And I was ultimately convinced that the Duke University guys found evidence repeatedly for ESP. That's not evidence for life after death, but it opens the door. It's something of us that can exist independently of the body. So if something can exist independently of the body, then when the body dies, there might be something left of us.
Absolutely. I studied that for a while. Actually, I got into the ethereal body. Have you ever studied that?
No.
Oh, wow. It talks about, you know, the different layers of the body, and it kind of goes into your aura and everything. And I think that after checking that out, I think that something does remain. It's kind of like the phantom limb syndrome. You know what I'm talking about? Where the amputee has... Yeah, and I think that's the same thing with ghosts. At least that's one man's opinion. I disagree
with that. I just think that phantom limb syndrome is the nerve endings reading as though there was something still there.
Well, see, you would be wrong, sir. You'd be wrong.
Are you aware
of this book, The Scalpel and the Soul?
Uh-uh.
It was written by this neurosurgeon, Alan Hamilton. I recently interviewed him. But he was telling me about a couple of brain surgeries where they basically had to kill the person. They had to make them completely flatline, and they chilled the body. So they were stopping the brain, stopping the heart. There was no blood flow. And he was telling me they were literally getting readings right off the cortex. The EEG machine was hooked up right to the brain. So the person was absolutely brain dead. And when after the surgery, when they came to, they were able to describe things that happened during the surgery. Now, normally when this happens, people say, oh, well, the person wasn't really completely under. But not only was this person completely under, they were dead. They were completely brain dead. And everything that we know about how the brain makes a memory, I mean, this actually goes against everything we know about how the brain makes a memory, because during that operation, the woman did not have a working brain. So somehow she was acquiring information and memories while she was dead.
Well, you know, Stacy, I'm going to read this title out in full for everybody out there because it's a heck of a title. it's Unbelievable, Investigations into Ghosts, Poltergeist, Telepathy, and Other Unseen Phenomenon from the Duke Parapsychology laboratory. And I suddenly had the urge to go to laboratory. Yeah, but we should have had Sammy Casey read that for us, Sean. Sent it to him.
Cemetery.
Cemetery, yeah. And had him.
What, a Takati?
Yeah. The Sammy Takati. But
now you got to know who that is, Stacy. Sammy Terry was the late night horror movie jockey here in Indianapolis, Indiana. And so, we had him on the show. It was a big to-do.
It was a bit of a private joke between us all because Sean grew up loving Sammy Terry and all those horror movies. So,
you know, he had the rubber spider on the string, and you could see the fishing line, Stacy. And, you know, he wore dishwashing gloves, and he'd go, you know?
He was kind of like Grandpa Munster, you know? It's,
like Chiller Theater and all that.
Yeah.
That was it. That was it, man. The golden age of TV when we were all kids, man. That's where it was.
So you're going to be doing other stuff about the book, going places and talking about it?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing readings and presentations and, all that stuff.
Well, when do we get to see you?
Well, you're in Indianapolis, but Nathan, you're close by, right?
I am in Connecticut. I am broadcasting live from the beautiful haunted woods of Danbury right now.
Close to Texachusetts.
I'm in Florida.
Yes. Well, I do have a Connecticut reading.
Where will
next
that be?
Next week. God, I'm not by my computer right now. Is it RJ Julia? Is that the one in Connecticut?
You know, hold on.
McLove.
Where would people find that? Because I'm looking for that on the...
It's on my website on the Unbelievable. Like, if you go to stacyhorn.com and click on Unbelievable, the blog.
The events part of it?
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
March 11th, you will be at you will have a presentation discussing blah, blah, blah at the Brookline Booksmith.
No, but if you go through that list, there's a Connecticut one in there somewhere.
Oh, there we go. All the way down here. It's March 16th. You will be having a reading at the R.J. Julia Booksellers on the Boston Post Road in Madison, Connecticut. And that's not too far from me. I hope I can make that.
That would be great.
So people can
I guess I'll just stay at home, Stacy, and hug myself. How about that? Huh?
Well, Stacy...
I'll fly to you, Sean, and I'll hug you.
Yes.
Stacy's staying over here on the East Coast with us, Sean. So
yeah, why come out to Indianapolis when you can actually afford the price of a meal without being taxed to death? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, I used to live in New York, Sean. I as long as you know where to eat, you can eat cheap in New York.
Right.
I used to get 6 chicken wings for $1 right across the street from the Madison Square Garden. So.
I eat a lot of pizza.
Yes, it pizza's, but it's the only place I've ever lived where I can call at 3 in the morning and get a Reuben delivered to my apartment. So
yeah.
But Stacy, I got to tell you, we broadcast coast to coast. We're the host with the most, and we want to tell everybody how they can get out and get your book right now. Unbelievable! Where can they go? They got to have it right away.
Well, you can go to Amazon or any online bookseller. I mean, it should be in the bookstores tomorrow, but get it online.
Absolutely.
Save yourself the shipping. Buy more. Go click on all the other paranormal books. It'll be underneath it. And Stacy's other books will be like right underneath it. Just click on them and order those too. Save yourself the shipping. Stacy, it's been great to have you here tonight.
Thank you so much for having me as a guest.
Oh, it's been a blast. And some of the stuff you said, it's like you said, you went through the box and it was just over your head. I can't even imagine going through 700 boxes of this stuff.
It was insane. It was insane. I was crying at one point. It was like, oh, this is going to take me years.
I actually, Stacy and I have a mutual friend, and I remember her telling me, or him telling me that when you first got down there and saw all the books, you went, when is this book supposed to come out? It's, it was great to have you on. People can
find you
at www.stacyhorn.com. If you want to hear more about the book and see her blog, you can go to stacyhorn.com/unbelievable. It's worth the time. Get out there, check it out. And that was my voice coming back to me. Stacy, thank you so much. And can you
thank you again.
Can you hang on the line while we wrap up?
Yeah.
Okay, Sean, guess what?
Yes.
It is time.
The author, Stacy Horn, the book Unbelievable, guys. Go out and get it right now. And be sure to check out our website at www.ghostanddemon.com and log into our forums because we really want to hear from you.
And don't forget, if you missed any part of this this broadcast, you can catch us on recording and podcasts at, all of the following places. You can find us at Planet Paranormal. My page just keeps scrolling without me. You can find us at Planet Paranormal, the Pod Feed Community, the Black Vault Radio Network, the Para X Network, the Blueberry, Pod Pickle, Mediafly, Podbean, iTunes, Podcast Alley, and the Podomatic system. And don't forget to join us next week when our guest will... I see how I talk so slow when I'm trying to find it. Sid Schultz will be on our show next week from
Sid
Schultz, so don't miss that. And Sean, why don't you... Jason, thank you for joining us.
No problem. I enjoy being here.
The whole four words you got to say because we were taking over the show.
What?
The whole four words you got to say because we took over.
Oh, it's fine. I have another talk show before this one.
Oh, that's right. The number six talk show. right after the number five.
Don't go changing ghost hunters. We won't. We love you.
Good night, everybody.
Night, guys.
Mwah.
So say good night to the bad guys.